Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. You can also give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Arcus Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam's Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of the penultimate show before the fall of America. Go out and vote, guys. Go out and vote. Do it. You know what? Maybe Emperor Palpatine wasn't the voice to go to there for the message I'm trying to send. I watched The Manchurian Candidate today, and I had no idea how incredibly relevant the themes of that film are to right now. I was like, oh my god. Film came out in 62. In the aftermath of the Korean War and all the stuff it's talking about. I was like, oh wow, this is incredibly relevant. All of the things this film. You know what? Vote and watch The Manchurian Candidate. Or watch The Manchurian Candidate first, then vote. It's a really good film. Caught me by surprise. There is a little bit of, you know, it's, again, a film from the 60s. There's certain attitudes that show their face in that film. I'm not here to talk about The Manchurian Candidate. I could do. I have found my Patreon specials. Anyway, I'm going to be talking about last week's Friday Night Smackdown and this week's Monday Night Raw. On our final trip to Crown Jewel, and then next Saturday is Crown Jewel. And this is, I think it's my first show where there's been a Saudi thing. I'm trying to remember what I did the last time there was a Saudi thing, because been a while. For Wrestling Headlines, when I cover all the WWE pay-per-views, I didn't cover the Saudi shows, because I didn't watch them. When they first started, I remember my first column for Wrestling Headlines was relatively up, I'm going to say relatively positive. I was basically just saying, this is what they've said, this is what they're promising with this deal. And at the end of it going, like, it's up to them to prove whether it's all bullshit or not. And then the very next Saudi event was like, okay, so we've seen it's bullshit. It's kind of just flowed from there. It got to a point where I was reading, every time it came to the next special, I was reading the latest UN reports just to see what was up. Like, what did I miss in the last 6 months? Switching from that to just flat out not really doing anything, like not really covering it or anything. So this is my first time, I think, in my mind, there's been a Saudi event since I've been here on Social Suplex. I just cannot remember what I did. As I sit here right now, I don't know what I'm going to do. My plan is to not cover it, and maybe I'll just do SmackDown and Raw as is and just don't talk about the Saudi event. Also, in terms of, before I get on SmackDown and Raw, in terms of things contained within the week, highly recommend this week, Trish and Sarah. And there's so much content coming out from like post-wrestling to do with John Pollock and especially Brandon Thurston over at WrestleNomics. They've had some consecutively really important shows to listen to this week. When I was here this time last week, 5 Ring Boys lawsuit had just dropped, and now the WWE ID to do with the independents and kind of like a filtering system to train people to eventually go to WWE. NXT UK alarm bells ringing because that it kind of dried the well of the UK independent scene, and it wasn't good for the UK wrestling scene at all. All the promises made about, oh no, this will be great, like we'll get these talent, it'll build it up, and then that will improve your system. No, you just dried the well. There was no things that the UK knows about trickle-down economics being bullshit. So if they're promising that again, it's like, fool me, it's one of those fool me once. What I would recommend is, I don't know if Sean Stapp's done it on an actual deep dive into it, but I do know he's been tweeting about how there were already people signed up to this thing. But I do know that Pollock has done a really good and important kind of like listen to diving into this stuff. If you want to know more about the WWE ID, go listen to that. All I can speak from is from the UK perspective. Alarm bells, immediate red flags, being like, well, this sounds familiar. So obvious pessimism, being like, all right then, okay. Anyway, but let's talk about Smackers and Monday Night Raw. Starting with tag team wrestling. I don't really dive into tag team wrestling that much on these things because WWE doesn't really highlight it as important. But this week, it was the backdrop for their important story. Therefore, it got some TV time. It's not the thing they actually want your attention to be, but it got some TV time by being important adjacent. So let's talk about tag team wrestling.
Crazy.
6 to 7 years ago, DIY versus Motor City Machine Guns would have been an absolute dream match. Commentary even hyped it as such. But how does it actually feel when it played out in WWE right now in the year 2024? Yeah, it's nice. Like, it feels nice for Sabin and Shelley to be getting their recognition of industry influence they deserve. An audience who, even just like a month ago, would reacted of who, has now been taught why they should be respected through the medium that they listen to. And that's nice. That's nice. They'll get recognition. Like, if you would have tweeted about how the Motor City Machine Guns deserve all the recognition for their influence, there would have been a pro WWE account jumped in there, being like, who? Make it to big league, don't matter. Now, even if this stint lasts like a few months, and it's not long at all, it feels like it's going to be longer, they're putting a lot of stock into them. If they were to just disappear, they've, at least through the medium that they listen to, they have been taught why they're important, and that, for me, that's for the Motor City Machine Guns, for Alex Shelley, Chris Sabin, that's just, it's just nice. It just feels nice. It's like, good for them, good for them. The number one contenders match itself, though, was given time through an ad break, more than enough time to play out the Teddy Wrestling Fun, a much better showcase of the duo than their debut last week in the three-way. But this all led to the Bloodline coming out. It's like, oh, you thought you got to recover before getting your tag team title shot? Like, no, that's not how villains operate. An opportunity to get Sabin and Shelley a tad of mic time before swinging straight into the makeshift main event. It did lead to quite a few people online talking about how much they prefer Solo Sikoa with a bit of this comedy. Like, oh my god, Solo, what a line, you're hilarious, mate. And I just sit there, I don't know if I feel nerdy when I say that, but I won't comment on it. I won't spoil all the people's fun or investment. It's like, you know what? If you think that that guy came up with that joke, good for you. He delivers this kind of scripted content better than the more serious or more akin to Roman type of stuff. Like, this feels more like whoever's writing Solo is getting a much better grasp for the character and doing this insulty stuff. Roman wouldn't do it because he's above it. Or at least he sees himself as above it. But Solo doing a bit of petulant, insulty mocking, that totally fits what they're going for at the moment. Yes, I would have loved his character to be what they were kind of building up to with that Hoss kind of silent guy that he was, which was very reminiscent of Roman's Shield character when he was that in the Bloodline. However, I feel like where these characters gone since, yeah, petulant insults and mocking like this fits far, far better. And he got a good reaction. Also, giving us the title match here works wonders long term when you decide to do a faux sudden match tease down the line. Actually give it, so we're more likely to believe your trick down the line. And they will trick us. They will trick us. And I'll fall for it and I'll be like, ah, oh well. You got me. There's nothing wrong with being tricked by the flow of the show. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, especially if creatively they've purposely played the beat so you go, oh, okay, this is where they're going, and then they do something else. That's not you being like, oh, he's such a mark. No, that's for me, that's good writing. We purposely do the beats of the thing to make your audience think it's going one way and then it goes another way. That's just good writing. Compared to Vince, where his thing of WWE could go anywhere was because there was like no setup, there's no grounding for stuff. So yeah, when there's no like rules to your universe, yeah, you can do anything and you can be like, oh, what a huge moment this is. But it, like, there's no grounding to it, so literally anything could happen and nothing means anything. So yeah. And yeah, boy, main event, Tongaloa, baby. You know you're in it for a good time. Not much time at all before the family members interfered. Ugh, holding my boy Tangaloa back. Jimmy Uso in his hoodie again, this time able to see Fatu coming, but not able to fend off Solo as well. Roman Reigns surprising, coming out to fend off the fake chief. The numbers game subsiding, but the referee down. Tongan's going for chairs, but we have ourselves our second hooded figure. It's Jay, staying hooded, but commentary calling it straight with no cartoony. Who could it be? Who is this man? Who is it? Take note of Excalibur. It's perfectly fine. If it's clearly obvious, it's Kyle Fletcher. I feel like you're allowed to go, okay, it's Kyle Fletcher. I don't know if Tony Khan's in the ear just being like, just keep saying that it's like, who is it, until he takes his hood off. And I'm like, but if it's blatant to your audience, they'll feel treated dumb if the commentary's been like, but who is it, when they can see it so clearly. Like, just do what you did here. When it's so clearly Jey Uso, just have the commentary be excited to match the crowd's atmosphere and reaction. I think that's my main thing. The commentary are, yes, they're telling the story and explaining things, but they kind of need to match the energy of the crowd to somewhat be like a crowd translator for those at home as well. Not just translating the action, they're translating the atmosphere in the crowd and everything. When Jay slides in and everybody in the crowd's like, oh my god, Jay, the commentary should also be like that. The commentary should do that too. They shouldn't try and be keeping up the facade of, but who could it be? It could be anybody, as he's super kicking, doing all of Jay's moves. Like, oh, it's Jay. Jay running main event riot, setting the Machine Guns up to win the tag team championships on their second night. The closing shot with Jimmy and Jay aligned once again, but Roman out on the stage, not being given that same love. Such a great note. Reigns now has the love of the WWE fans, but it's the recognition from within his family he's having to fight for. Complete inverse of the Tribal Chief character beforehand. But also, I was talking about when I introduced the segment, the Tag Team Championship's gone over to the Motor City Machine Guns on the second night. It feels like a huge deal. You could be like, oh, it's a huge push. But it more felt like they got on this main event angle with them becoming champions because they weren't the main event angle. They were next to it. They happened to be next to the main event angle, which was to do with the Bloodline losing their titles. I don't think this does a lot for momentum for Motor City Machine Guns, purely because I feel like next week they're going to have to get the ignition going again to do something to try to get us invested. This was a really good week for that. It was a way better presentation for them this week than it was last week. They kind of just got lost in the flow of their match. It was nice to see them. I feel like that's my main thing. I'm not excited seeing them at the moment. It just feels nice. And maybe that is just like the excitement of them arriving, and eventually that all will die off and I'll get used to whatever their characters become in WWE. But at the moment it just feels nice, and they didn't really break through that here. It just felt like it was a much better presentation to people who don't really know them, that they got a much better flow for what they're like in the ring and what their style is. A single match with DIY felt way, way better as a way to introduce them to new fans. But they weren't the focus, because Jey Uso's the focus, Roman Reigns is the focus. Them lifting up the titles like they got their second, but them holding the titles isn't the closing shot. For me, it's like, this isn't like a main event push for the Motor City Machine Guns as soon as they arrive. It feels more like, tangentially, there's a Bloodline story playing out. Now that they're champions, they won't be main event again. And the Bloodline and the main event angle. But yeah, I did really like what it did for the Roman Reigns character. It's an inverse of who he was fighting against and what he's kind of fighting for through the Tribal Chief original rise and character and title run. The damage that Tribal Chief run has done to his family isn't just something that can be immediately repaired. It's going to take time, as it should. Play this out to Survivor Series. Even for me, I don't think I want Jay to have forgiven him before Survivor Series. I'd probably use Survivor Series as part of that angle. That little thing of kind of how they're using Sammy as well. Like, Jay is in on the fight against the Bloodline, but he's not in on being allies with Roman, where that angle feels like it's a way to easily get Sami Zayn in there too. That's what Monday Night Raw will be setting up when we get to it. Actually, yeah, that's jumping ahead. So yeah, I'm a fan of what it did for Roman, getting the tag titles off of my boy Tangaloa. Oh, keeping him down. The other main segment I wanted to talk about was Randy Pandy opening the show. He wanted to have a chin wag with Kevin Owens. Someone above Nick Aldis wasn't allowing it. Like, oh man, all these people making Triple H go out in front of the fans. How dare they? How dare they? Orton accusing Trips of protecting KO. Over and over telling him that's not the case. But Randy's voices have done what convinced him. Like, Randy, mate, pal, I'm trying to protect you. Trips' own chin wag with KO concerned him, saying that when he talked to KO, that he felt like in his mind, Cody and Randy turned on him. This isn't the same Kevin Owens. There's something different in his eyes. Orton appealed to the wrestler in him, gave in with the crowd chanting for it, giving the match for Crown Jewel, but a lovely little setup making it very clear that Trips believed this is going to end badly. I like where this has gone, where Kevin Owens has been cutting these promos from his car with his iPhone and things, just feeling very, very different from anything else. Been playing out on social media, so it just the big angles in it, so it just feels entirely different from anything else on the show. For me, for kind of bubbling a heel character, that's absolutely fine. Just parlaying to the audience like certain little characteristics before we properly see him again. And Triple H did that to an absolute T here. Him coming out here was just, without seeing Kevin Owens, just informed the audience of what the guy's going to be like. And it sets up really well for us to see him in Saudi Arabia. For him doing that match with Randy Orton and just seeing what this new KO is actually like. But that does immediately take me into the other notes. Andrade vs. Carmelo Hayes Game 7 ended in LA Knight special guest referee throwout. Nobody wins! How very WWE of you. Finding a way to get both lads into a United States Championship match at the sacrifice of their now hyped series having no winner. Knight announced himself the Game 7 winner, but Nick Aldis was like, I don't know about that, Jeff. Triple threat at Crown Jewel all set up. Like, in AEW that'd be an issue, but in WWE it's just kind of par for the course. So it's like no big deal, whatever. It's been on my other notes every week for a reason. It's been like, yeah, cool. Candice LeRae faced Naomi as she replaced Stratton in champion Jax's Trust following last week's win. Repeating the same flow, showing it to work for a second week in a row with Inti interrupting to shove into the ring post, only for Bayley to run out and break that all up. And finally, Cody and Gunther, they did their absolute best to try and make me care about the Blood Money Championship. Making a big deal out of a champion versus champion match is grand. It's just got that KSA bubble stank all over it. In that, I have no faith it will mean anything after Saturday. Did I enjoy Gunter cutting off Cody's woe? Yes. that was nice. That was a nice moment. Suck it, Codes. Oh, I can't say shit like that on the same network as Floyd. It's all right. There's nobody tell him. It's okay. But yeah, 2 weeks ago, I've talked all about how this kind of championship where difficult to get invested just because in that Vince era where it was the Saudi government kind of dictating how, what they wanted to be on the show, they just had their own bubbles. And there was a massive improvement when those shows stopped being that and then started to feed into the actual flows and stories of the show. So it felt more like a pay-per-view special, which then fed into what was going around it. And you saw a massive increase in quality for these shows. We're back to ordained stuff, being like, no, we get the biggest, most specialist thing. But you're not going to be carrying that around for the rest of the year, so there's none of the selling of its importance afterwards. It's just a thing that happens and is forgotten about, so its importance is never sold. So, yeah. They put in the effort, they've had the people coming out with the white gloves carrying the special box every week. They do it at the start of the show, it's like the first thing you see is you walking into the arena every time, which I feel like is smart, rather than partway through the show, they show it being carried around backstage or something. Because I feel like when I see that, immediately it gives the space for the audience to go, ugh, okay. You put it at the beginning, they're already doing their cheer being like, yay, the show's starting. Doesn't have that same space to get the boo reaction as it would do if you did it late in the show. So I think it's smart to start with it. Is it getting me invested? No. Because I still have no faith it'll mean anything. It's like, for me, it gets the same gets that same response. Just being like, I still don't feel any inclination to care for this. However, I will admit, where it's structure-wise, where it's put in the show, this is a far better place to put it, like at the start. Anyway, but yes, for next SmackDown, absolutely fine build. Nothing crazy, but some really nice notes. And Machine Guns winning, I guess, was a surprise, but it was set up on late Raw. Well, actually, Jey Uso talks about that when we get into his promo that he started off Raw with. So maybe we just jump over to that. Maybe we jump over to Jey Uso. We jump over to Hershey, Pennsylvania. Politically, a really interesting place for Raw to happen to be from, given how high their Puerto Rican population is. Like, I was like, oh, out of all places that they are, that's an interesting one for them to be. Monday Night Raw was live from the Giant Center. Looks normal size to me. Let's jump on over. I've got to do my shit joke. Let's jump on over.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get tender bone-in pork back ribs for $3.49 a pound with your card. Then get 16-ounce packages of juicy strawberries for $1.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jey Uso entered through the crowd with big energy, getting Hershey to their feet. Like, nothing like a bit of exercise to wake the class up a bit. You all look a bit sleepy today, so get to shake your hands. All that stuff. They cost me my Intercontinental title. I went to SmackDown and cost them their tag team championship. Selling us on why he's getting invested in the Bloodline feud once again, but also painting him as not realigned with Roman Reigns fully. You're like, yay, we're all babyfaces now. Bringing out Jimmy Uso, who thanks his brother for what he did on Smackers. Jey's response, a nice little recap of everything he's been doing since WrestleMania, becoming a single star since Jimmy's been out. There's no one in the WWE or audience asking which Uso's that anymore. Getting on the same page but making that promise that they can't go back to being some side piece yes men. Cue the Bloodline attack. Solo and friends all there to party 3-on-2 as Sokoa shouted orders from ringside. The Usos fought the lads off, so he gets that showing of just how strong the brothers are when united and together, which sets us up nicely for Sami Zayn's involvement to tease and kind of play a little bit on the show. First, talking to Jey backstage, unable to understand why Jey would get involved and go back into any form of Bloodline drama at all. A nice setup for Sami, with Jey telling him, "Of course you don't, you're not family." There's a line hitting really hard, but a really good setup for where Sami's character can go next. Because being accepted by the Bloodline was so huge for him. And then gaining that confidence through Kevin Owens to be like, no, I can be something. And seeing him play out and him become IC champion too. Just the whole character has been in really, really strong stuff for Sami. Leading to Jey somewhat vouching for the Canadian later on to Jimmy. That little story of Zayn getting suckered back in unwantingly starting to play out. There's our fourth man for the Survivor Series. For War Games, there's our fourth man. Speaking of war, that takes me into Seth Rollins and Bronson Reed. I don't really have much more to say for the Usos Sami Zayn segment. Like, it's nice, it's setting it up, it's okay, it's all right. Sometimes, that's the thing with the Triple H kind of era with this stuff. Sometimes you'll go through a segment like this and be like, yeah, it's decent stuff, like, you're setting it up nicely. Got nothing else to say. Like, it was, yeah, set it up all right. His NXTs were like this as well, where it'd be perfectly fine, really, just to tune out for a few weeks, and then when you come back, like, you'd enjoy yourself if you watch the shows, but they weren't super important to see every single week. And it's the same case with Raw here, where it's not like it was under Vince, where watching the shows actually hurt your investment, so the best way to watch it was to not watch it. This is more like you can tune in at your leisure in between the shows, and you will get more if you've watched every one of them. That said, it's not necessary. Like, it's all right. Like, it's perfectly okay to not watch them all. But I have been enjoying Seth Rollins and Bronson Reed, especially just Bronson Reed just every week at the moment, with the fun backstage brawls continuing. They've been giving Reed different shit to do each time, really putting that creative wheel behind him and making sure his segments have that feeling of seeing something new. Seth with a kind of generic promo, but the segment really woke up when Reed appeared on the screen from the parking lot, calling Sethy Boo on out, and we followed the man single shot all the way from the stage to the cars. That really helps it just feel less produced. The fact that there weren't multiple cameras already set up to fast cut between. Like, is this off the cuff, or have you set up a whole camera thing to be playing out here? Like, it's just one camera that was in the arena at the beginning of the segment. So they didn't have a camera out there, anything out there prepared. For me, that makes it really easy to forgive. The multiple lights you can see reflecting off the trucks. So, like, the whole area is properly lit. Those are, like, little things where you kind of, your investment isn't broken, even though if you think about it for a second, it doesn't make sense. Like, they go into the parking lot, it's properly lit. The truck that they fight in has got all of its lights on. It's properly lit inside so brightly, like properly professional production. They crash out and go over those cloth of black tables, and it's all properly lit and everything. And yeah, you can see the bright white lights reflecting off the truck. But, you know, because of the way that it played out, with it starting in the arena, then going through backstage and then onto the outside. Well, actually, no, let me rephrase that. Because it starts with Bronson Reed on the Titantron, there's a reason for it all to be lit in there. But then there is no reason for the truck inside to be lit. But you never think about that. You never think about it. Like, it's all right. Like, you've been given a reason for light source to exist outside, meaning when there's a one way, if you think about it for a second, going, oh yeah, why are all the lights inside the truck turned on? It's not being used. That's just an incredible waste of electricity. But it doesn't matter. You don't think about it. And that's the kind of nerdy shit that production people think about, so you don't have to. The last thing of it is like, oh yeah, if he's been interviewed outside, it makes sense that he would be lit. Therefore, if we light other stuff, you're just kind of automatically forgiving. You don't even think about it. It just, your mind never flags it as something odd or anything. Anyway, that's a tangent. Let's rein it back. Seth stomped Bronson Reed's head onto a hood, chattered shit to the camera, and got banged. Will he ever learn this lesson? Reed walking back up with purpose, dragging Seth into the fully lit interior of the truck, Death Valley drivering him through some black cloth tables. It's just so much fun. I just really enjoy these Bronson Reed segments, to a point where it's like, oh, do you have to wrestle in the ring? Like, I almost feel like the best thing for him would be an actual backstage ball match, or just like a false count anywhere affair. I feel like that's really fitting for where this Bronson Reed character could be building to. I just want to see him to be a big brawly all over the place, because they're just fun, they're exciting. Like when Darby Allin comes out on pay-per-view and you just know that you're in for like a fun... if he comes out in a tag team match, you know you're going to be in for like a fun 10-15 minutes of just brawling around the arena, jumping through tables off all sorts of shit. Like, it's just going to be fun. You're going to be in for like chaos, the whole crowd's going to be woken up. I feel like Bronson Reed could have that same effect on a WWE crowd. I mean, WWE shows don't really need it, because their pay-per-views are much shorter, with constant breaks in between. Like, almost every pay-per-view from the penultimate match to the main one is like a 30-minute gap. Like, AEW is just like bang, 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 one after the other. So a match like the Darby Adam one, where it's kind of just fun, energetic, that's really needed on an AEW show. WWE, like, you were waiting 15 minutes for it to start, so then do you want just like a fun little thing, which isn't really story heavy, hasn't really been massively built up, but it's good fun. It's like, but I don't think they belong on WWE cards. Purely because you got like 10 minutes to wait before it starts, and you got another 10-15 minutes for the match after it starts. So it would feel like a waste of time a lot more, just because you were waiting for it to begin. Anyway, that does take me onto the other notes. Who was Dom's former world champion opponent? Damien Priest, of course. I guess I like that they didn't just hang that over for the whole entire show, even though I do like surprise championship matches not really having that huge build, but they're like, no, we can hype it up for the main event that he's facing Damien Priest. That said, I felt like this match and this whole segment was just a really odd choice for the main event. A quick match with Priest mostly just battering the lad until the baddie faction all came out to play, sans Finn. Priest taking care of both Carlito and JD, but Dom just rolled him up in the distraction to win. But it's alright, in true WWE playbook fashion, getting his momentum back by beating all the villains up after the match. And then that was it. Ending that way, Damien Priest having destroyed them, with trying to sell both the, yeah, I beat them up, as well as, I'm just angry and annoyed and pissed that I lost, that I fell for that kind of thing. It felt like a bit of a weak main event angle, and on what happened on NXT, just not really their fault. On NXT, Rhea Ripley was taken out. It appears that she suffered, unfortunately, like another injury off of a headbutt spot. She's out again. It's like, oh. So they did an attack angle from the Judgment Day, beating them up, leaving her bloody at the end of NXT. And back to Raw, the tag team number one contender triple threat, Dragon Lee and Ray Ray versus Viking Raiders versus New Day. Each team has one lad in format is easily my favourite for these multi-team flows. In spite of this being in the final 30 minutes of the show, like, the team still got the time to play through an ad break. Like, in the end, Chad Gable attacked Rey Mysterio and locked the ankle lock ringside as Viking Raiders snapped in on poor Kofi for the win. Perfectly enjoyable. Nothing super crazy or high being like, oh, you need to watch this or anything. But it was a decently fun flow. Like, it's okay. Kaiser and Sheamus also had a perfectly fine little bout in the post-opening promo banger spot. Sheamus back into his spot that I've coined after him. Zelina Vega out with her black and white Puerto Rico flag to lose to America. Like, hell of a week for this to be the cold beat. Like, if you watched the segment last week, this was the cold beat. This was where they were going to be building to after what happened between the two last week. Obviously, they couldn't have predicted what would happen over the weekend. That said, it just made it just a bit more interesting. Because Zelina Vega coming out to a great reaction, because it's, again, quite a decent size Puerto Rico base in Pennsylvania. So just seeing her get a reaction like that, and kind of like a pretty strong welcome. But this is the week where America wins. Very quick brawlings over ringside. Ivy Nile with a swinging Uranagi for the win. As soon as he hit that, I was like, I don't know if she can hit that move on anybody else on the roster. Because Ivy Nile's not... She's strong, but she hasn't quite got the height for it. And Zelina Vega, like, she's a perfect size for Ivy Nile to hit that move on. And I was, but as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh yeah, I didn't mind that. That's all right. A shame she can't hit that on most of the people. It's like, oh, that's a shame. R-Truth got a rare moment to show some smarts, not falling for Miz's ways and giving him a receipt in the form of a grounding slap. Good luck with the Wyatts. Cross later ordering Miz to find Bo Dallas, a dose of be careful what you wish for the Miz as he's aligned with the villains, and then realising very much that this might be, it's not safe for him actually, this may not be, that they don't actually value him, they want to just use him to get to the Wyatts, because it's almost like a canary down the mine. Hey guys, it's me, Miz, it's Mike, hi guys. That's what I'm expecting this segment to be next week, just very nervously, but hi guys, it's me. I'm like 45 now. He's got to be that old, right? And also, actually, just talking about the Pennsylvania thing, the final note I've got, so I'm not sure the Pennsylvania crowd was the best place to plug an Undertaker show. Like, with the crowd audio, I'm surprised they didn't pipe in a cheer, but when they started plugging the Undertaker show, the crowd sound was just very muted. There didn't seem to be a cheer. Like, normally there's a pocket that you can turn up, but they didn't. Either they didn't bother or there wasn't one, where normally there's just like a little pocket cheer, being like, oh, Undertaker, just like almost in a reaction type of thing. But no, the Undertaker came up and it was quite muted. Yeah, like what I've just been talking about, it kind of makes sense that maybe not the biggest fans of the Undertaker right now. But anyway, that brings me to the end of the show. It's not going to be as short as last week's, because last week's was more, let's go through this important thing and then I'll see you guys next week. This was more, there's just a bubbling week. There's not a lot to say. It's like, yeah, it's decent. A lot of it is okay bubbles, and not a lot of it is really super worth watching. I feel like the biggest note from this is it is just that take from how it was like to watch NXT, and this is one of those weeks. If you don't watch either of these shows, that is absolutely fine. If you don't watch Crown Jewel, it's likely to be absolutely fine. It's not the end of the world. You're perfectly able to keep up with the kind of flow afterwards. All of the biggest acts are either not on the show or tied up in the Champion vs. Champion programs, which won't mean anything afterwards. You got little bubble stuff, like the reintroduction of Kevin Owens against Randy. But it aren't any big angles playing out on the show. Just stuff that's been built within this bubble. So I feel like this show kind of reflected that. Like, this was the go-home Raw for Crown Jewel, and my thing was, oh, that was a slightly odd kind of main event angle, and paired that with, yeah, it's perfectly fine if you don't watch this show this week. Like, the pay-per-view is this Saturday. It's technically a go-home show. So it's like, it's good, the go-home show for the red brand, and that was my feeling. It somewhat aids my question of, am I going to watch Crown Jewel at all? I feel like they've built it enough for it to be perfectly fine to skip. That's my absolute feeling. Pull a CM Punk and be like, oh, I've hurt my knee, I can't go. Oh, I happen to have been in this, like, to have timed it absolutely perfectly for the future event, so I don't have to do Crown Jewel. Like, oh, it's a shame. Oh, such a shame. Sorry, Jeremy, the daddy of Social Suplex. Oh, I'm not going to be able to cover the show. It's like, oh, I've got a... Arcane comes out next week on Netflix, season 2. So I've got to rewatch season 1. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know what I mean? It's been a while. It's a good show. It's quite memorable. I don't need to remember all the beats. I need to remember it, like, properly. Episode 3 is good. Anyway, with that said, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never take it for granted. I didn't plug the merch. God damn it. Let's plug the merch now. I've always said I don't like ending the show plugging the merch. I want to plug it at the start when I've, like, got your attention. Before the flow of just talking about all the wrestling stuff has come in. Yes, please do go on over to chopped-tees.com to get all the Social Suplex merch. Be it from... Trish and Sarah's Mind, because that's the latest show I listen to from my network. Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, Rich and James for One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, Chris Things, obviously his art that his does on a t-shirt, Sam Brown as well, with his amazing shirt where it's designed like a tour, which is awesome, with all the matches on the back, really love that one. And obviously my stuff with all my logos on it, and Social Suplex with their main designs too. Big shout out to Dickie for all the work he's done there. And with that, I say, follow me at Blue Sky. I'm on there. I've put the link, the stuff in the details for this now. So I've got all my Blue Sky details there. Whether it's on on my personal feed. There is a personal feed for this podcast now as well. I need to share that. But there is a personal Imps Adventure feed. And there is also on the main Social Suplex feed as well. All that detail is in there. For both my Blue Sky contacts and Social Suplexes. If you want to, leave the musk. who knows what's going to happen in the next month? What wildly is going to be different in terms of that landscape? So yeah, because I can't remember what day America votes on. Again, go out and vote, guys. Proof I've got so little to talk about this week. I've talked about the Manchurian candidate. I did a whole bit on Arcane. I've thought about politics a bit. I feel like I've drip fed in political stuff just because I've just got like nothing. A really nothing week. I guess my main thing would be as well, just with all the other like serious stories coming out around WWE. Trish and Sarah for me is an absolute must listen at the moment, as well as now and then just checking in on what John Pollock's been putting out on post-wrestling. Anyway, so with that, I'm totally done. I've already done the outro, then I've done a little bit, so I'm all over the place. But anyway, with that, I say thank you, and I bid you adieu. Adios.